High jumper Emily Borthwick had quite the debut for Team GB, as she starred at the European Indoor Championships back in March this year. She recorded a 4-centimetre personal best of 191 to qualify for the high jump final and finish 8th in Europe. But at the heart of that insane result, combined with the hard work and the determination, was the mental side of the game. As Emily put it in this episode, it was the decision to just be good. Prior to her third attempt at the indoors, her coach, Fuzz Khan, told her to change her emotion, not her technique, emphasising just how much the performance was down to the mental side, and it all clicked into place. On this podcast, Emily takes us through that performance, and how everything mentally is clicking into gear after years of just missing out on junior teams. She also tells us what her aims are for the future, and also her role with Totally Runnable, a project we are massive fans of on this podcast, which helps schools close their gender sport gap. Emily, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for coming on to the show. How is everything at the moment?
Hello. Thanks, Alistair. Everything's really good at the minute. I'm just really, really busy. Training's through the roof. We're opening our season in 3 weeks. So it's getting closer. It's getting close to crunch time. It's a little bit intense, but no, it's going well.
Yeah, definitely closer to crunch time. But as we were just talking about before I turned on the recording for this particular podcast episode, it's been an interesting past few weeks, I think, what with isolation and testing positive after the indoors.
Yeah, I mean, that was a bit of a shock, to be honest. Obviously, got selected for my first senior international for Great Britain and then came home and had to isolate for 3 weeks. It wasn't the best. But thankfully, it didn't set me back too much. I wasn't too ill, so that was fine, but I've only been back training 2.5 weeks now, so it's been tough getting back into it, but like I say, I'm enjoying every minute. So
how is it getting back into it when you've had, I suppose, that amount of time away from it? Is there a little bit of time that needed to adjust back or get back into the swing of things?
I think you can look at it in two ways. I mean, obviously you spend time away from the track, so you're resting, you're recovering, you take away that intensity, but then you go back and it's like you're playing catch up, because the rest of my group are already 2 weeks into the next block of training, whereas I'm 2 weeks behind. So, you know, you're comparing yourself to them at where the stages they're at and the sessions you're doing. So we were doing more winter-based circuit, like heavy training, just to, you know, build that base back up in case we lost any fitness or any strength over the 3 weeks that I wasn't there. I mean, I was fortunate enough to have like a little weight set up in our garage, and I was able to do some stuff outside in the garden and things like that. And then just like home workouts and circuits. So it wasn't too bad, because I was having a little break after indoors anyway. But towards the end of the 3 weeks, I think motivation was quite low. So when I got back to the track, it was a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Is that the motivation side of things? Because it's, I think we've all probably experienced it in one way or another, haven't we, throughout the last year and a half that this has been going on for. How do you find that? Is it kind of easy to switch it back on when you can?
I think so. I think you just reflect on what you've done already. So obviously my indoors was the best indoors I've ever had. And that just gave me so much confidence moving forward into the outdoor season, and obviously going back to training, because I'd almost made my mark. I'd had my first debut on my international career, and I just wanted to keep that momentum going. Obviously, that was slowed down slightly by not being at the track for a couple of weeks. But obviously, the fire's still there, and, you know, you want to make summer bigger and better. So, yeah.
Definitely. Speaking of the indoors then, seems like a pretty good place to start. Back in March now.
Yeah.
GB debut, like you said. First senior final and a big PB along the way. I imagine life still feels pretty good after that.
Yeah, of course. Like, it was one of the best experiences of my life. And going in as, say, like an underdog, obviously I wasn't going to medal or anything like that, but to be a finalist was a shock. It wasn't a shock to my coach and my family, because obviously I've been working hard for the last however many years, and I finally just caught my break. But because I didn't get to celebrate it because we were stuck inside and had to isolate, it kind of, the moment kind of went. So then when I was like back into normal life, and I was able to see like my training group and people at the track, they were still obviously talking about it, and I was kind of like, oh yeah, I kind of forgot that happened because it was like 3 weeks ago. But then as soon as someone starts talking about it, that triggers in your mind all the memories, and then feelings start coming back, and then I just started getting excited all over again, and I just wouldn't stop talking about it, and I'd be bouncing around and full of energy. So I mean, obviously a PB is a PB, it's the best height that you've ever, you know, that I'd ever performed, or your best performance of your life. So you don't, for the period of time, you don't forget about it. And obviously social media is so powerful, all the videos are out there, all the pictures are out there, so you're constantly reminded of it. So yeah, I do look back at the videos sometimes and just get excited all over again, but yeah, no. It's, yeah, still feeling good. But
yes, you should. Yeah. That almost sums up. I mean, we've all gotten, I suppose, relatively used to like no fans, or just not having that same sort of buzz in, whether it's stadiums or arenas or anything like that, throughout the last year and a half. But that kind of sums it up, don't you think? Like,
yeah, definitely. It's a
great moment, I mean, but you know, that little dip.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And obviously, like, after every big performance, for any athlete, you always have a bit of a crash. So, you know, it happens, and then you come down from it, and then, you know, you'll see people and they'll be like, oh, congratulations, or well done. And it triggers again. But I'm kind of using it as motivation for summer, because I know that I can jump higher and, you know, make more teams. And it's like, because it's the start of my career, so I just want to, you know, can wear the vest and compete for the country more often. So yeah,
is that part of the key for probably a lot of athletes, is to use the crash as, I suppose, the driving force for what comes next?
I think so. But it's also it's a good judge of character as well, because a lot of people will be consumed by it and then struggle to then get themselves out of like that hole, because obviously they've done an amazing performance and they think, they start to doubt themselves and like, oh, could I repeat this again? Could I do it again? Could I go to a major champs and make a final? Like, even myself, you'd be questioning like, oh, was it a fluke? Did I just pull it out of the bag on the day it just happened? Or, you know, is this going to be a consistent thing? And I think you've just got to make that decision that that's what you want, and you want to be consistent, and you want to be making teams, and you want to be making finals. So I guess it's just how you deal with it and how you handle it afterwards that's really important.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of sort of the mindset side of things, I think, was it on the British Athletics Facebook page, or I saw a video you'd done afterwards about your coach, Fuzz, yeah, basically saying to you that, saying change your emotion, not your technique?
So Fuzz has got a wonderful way with words. And
it's a great quote, in fairness.
And he likes, I mean, if you see Fuzz's Twitter, then you'll see he likes his quotes and things like that. But it was so true, because a lot of the time, especially with high jump, it is such a mental game. And you do get really emotional, because it's you against the bar. And you could either let it stress you out, or you can just embrace it and just, you know, be like, right, it's me v you, I'm going to win. And I hadn't PB'd for like 4 years. So I jumped 87 2 weeks before Europeans. So that was like a big PB for me, because I hadn't PB'd in 4 years. So then to jump 91 was just like insane. But before I took my third attempt, he said that to me. And it really does, like, you really have to think, like, you've worked hard for 4 years. Like, you now need to make the decision in your head that, no, I'm accepting that I'm going to clear this bar, and I'm going to be happy about my decision, and not worry about if I'm running fast enough, if I'm got the shape of my curve right, if I'm driving my knee up high enough. It's just allowing myself to do it and enjoying that moment.
Definitely. Was that mindset thing or the emotion thing, was that something that you've really had to work on over the last 4 years, or is it kind of falling into place, if you like?
I think so. I mean, he'll always say to me, I'm a day late or a dollar too short, because I've always been close to making junior teams and under 23 teams, and I've always just missed out. Either I was a centimetre away, or I missed a deadline and jumped the standard 2 weeks late. And it was kind of becoming a recurring theme. And then this year, I spoke to a psychologist only just before Europeans. I kind of took the responsibility myself and made the decision to be good. Before indoors, I was like, right, this is it now. You've put all the work in. Why are you holding yourself back? And I think I just needed that reassurance and just someone to say, no, you're thinking the right things. You need to just believe in yourself. And that's what I did, and that's what made the change. I think maturity was another thing as well. And just getting on with it, because it's almost like I've been holding myself back for 4 years, and now it was like, no, I need to just get my ass in gear, really.
That's, yeah. I always find that so interesting. It's just how much of a difference just your mindset can be. As I say, like, even from, you know, anyone can probably speak about moments where they've had that nagging self-doubt, or those moments where they think, am I actually good enough if, you know, the same thing keeps happening and keeps happening. Yeah. Even when I go back to sort of when I was actually a decent fencer rather than sort of a part-time fencer like I am now. And I can think of those moments as well when I'm in like competition and you almost get that mental block sometimes.
Yeah.
To make that decision, like you say, just to be good. I don't know. It sounds simple, doesn't it? But I imagine there's so much more to it.
I mean, of course, like it is simple, but it's supposed to be a simple decision. But for some reason, athletes just make it too hard for themselves. And I think you just get to a point where you're like, I don't give myself enough credit. I've not, you know, shown to myself, because it's not about everyone else. It's not about proving yourself to other people. It's about proving yourself to you. And I still hadn't done that. And I was like, someone's trusting in me to go out there, get experience and perform at an international level. Why am I not capitalizing on this experience? And I put in the training and I knew that I could jump those heights and be up there with those girls. But then I just had to accept that it was, because I mean, I got selected for Europeans and my first thought was I didn't deserve to be there because I hadn't jumped the standard. I was nowhere near the 90s that the girls were jumping. And it was like, oh, I don't really deserve to be here. And then, you know, a week went by and I was like, well, I'm on the plane, I've got my ticket, I'm going. So I kind of need to start believing that I should be here and I am one of those girls. And I think that was like the turning point for me.
Mm. Rather than, I suppose, comparing yourself to others, just doing it for you.
Yeah.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
I think that's a big message a lot of people can probably take from that.
I hope so.
We obviously talked about sort of testing positive and COVID beforehand, but in terms of juggling restrictions and I suppose our general way of life now, because it has changed quite dramatically in the last year and a half. How has that been sort of juggling the training, living your life, but I suppose university work at the same time, and just all of that that's come together?
So I only moved to Loughborough last May. So I was actually traveling to Loughborough and Birmingham 3-4 times a week from Wigan, which is in the northwest. So a 4.5-hour round trip some days just to get to training 3-4 times a week. And I wanted to do my master's anyway. It was going to be in Birmingham or Loughborough because that's where I was training. So I was going to move at some point. But then I decided to move mid-pandemic, which I guess has paid off, and it was a huge risk. But with not being able to do uni until September, I guess I was fine for the summer. I was working 4 or 5 part-time jobs before that to save up so I could move to Loughborough without any financial stress. At some point that was going to run out, which it did back in February, March. So I kind of put in some extra work last indoors just to make sure that I was in a comfortable position to move and focus on training just for a little bit before kind of getting back to that juggling part-time job, master's, training, that kind of thing. But because of going through that, I ended up in a better position when I moved. So I was able to train on the fields as everyone else was doing, gymming in the back garden, that kind of thing. I was staying at some friend's house, then I was staying in a flat somewhere, and that was so unsettling last year. But I kind of had to get through it just to be where I am now. Because if I didn't, then I wouldn't be able to train with my coach every day. I wouldn't be with my training group every day. I wouldn't have this athlete lifestyle that I've now got. And I mean, you say restrictions. For most of us, obviously, it was difficult in the first lockdown because training, like we couldn't train. I couldn't physically jump and do my event because I couldn't access a high jump bed. So we did everything else except jumping. And it almost was a huge winter block. We had like 6 months winter block, which in a career, you'd never get that much time to build your body and work on all the little things that make the final product. And I think it was probably one of the best things that happened to me, the pandemic, because I moved out of my family home, living in a new town, and I decided to take a risk and focus fully on my athletics, and then everything else would just have to fall into place after that. So I don't mind that we didn't have pubs open or anything like that, because it's not part of my usual weekly routines. I guess the whole socializing with friends was a little bit difficult because, you know, you're isolated, you're not allowed to see people and that kind of thing. And obviously I was away from my family then and I couldn't go back and see them. But I think it's made me the person that I am today, and that's added just to the last couple of months where I've made these changes and these huge positive steps forward within my mindset as well.
Yeah, that was going to be what I was going to say after that, as you've got that time to as well build your body and your final product, but has it built you into a better person as well?
Yeah, definitely. I'm obviously a lot. I was quite independent anyway because I was obviously driving to training on my own, and you know, all the decisions were made by myself, and that was my responsibility. It wasn't anybody else's decisions. And then I think because of it, yeah, I'm definitely stronger, and I don't have to rely on anyone else. You know, it's my life, it's my decisions, and then I'll just take responsibility of whatever. So right now I'm training as normal. I'm able to do all my sessions. I'm working evenings and nights at a part-time job. I've got another job where I'll do some work in schools. And I've kind of just, I don't know, found a lifestyle that works for me and ticks all the boxes. And yeah, it's taken a lot to get to this point. But yeah, I'm definitely stronger because of it. And yeah, in terms of mindset, yeah, definitely in a better place. Yeah.
It's amazing what happens when you start doing things for you, isn't it? And just, I suppose, putting yourself first a lot of the time.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, people say that you need to look after number one, which is yourself. And that's what I did. I started prioritizing me because sometimes I fall into the trap of helping others before myself. Like I'm such like a friend person. I want to help my friends before me. So if there's any issues, I'll sort everyone else out, then I'll sort myself out. And it was almost getting to the point where it was just draining me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I moved so early, because I was only supposed to move to Loughborough in like August. But it was just too much and I just wasn't prioritising me. But I think that's made the massive difference, yeah.
Yeah, and it definitely looks like it's made a massive difference too.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. Turning back the clock then, or turning back the clock a bit, how do you get into athletics in the first place? Well, I suppose more specifically high jump as well.
So the high jump story is a bit of a funny one, because so I started out as a multi-eventer and did like 800s when I was at school. I mean, I've been doing athletics since I was 7 and I've been competing since I was 9. So it's been been in sport a really long time. High jumping, I've only been high jumping 5-6 years, like properly, wholeheartedly training full time for high jump. I went for a spell of doing pentathlons, heptathlons, and then I moved to 300s and 400s. So I've kind of had a variety of experience in a couple of events. It's not always just been one. I've kind of bounced around a bit, mainly because I just didn't like the training, I think. I mean, I was doing 3s and 4s and I just didn't enjoy running. And I almost like left the sport because I just wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't performing. I mean, to be fair, I did excel as a junior in the 4s. I ran a really quick time. I represented England, an age group younger than I should have, and little things like that. But I just wasn't enjoying running. And then I think I was competing at like a county champs or something like that, or a county teams event, and they needed athletes to compete to get points for the team. And they said, oh, can someone do high jump? And I was like, oh, I can do it, but I've only got long distance spikes. And they were like, oh, it's fine, just chuck them on and then just see how you get on. And I think I ended up getting like a 9 centimeter PB or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is weird. But I think I jumped like 175. So at the time it was respect, like it was really good height. And I think in terms of the rankings in the UK, it was like top 5. And I was like, oh, like, I'm actually all right at this, even if I've been away from it for a while and I've come back and I've done it for a bit of fun. And I think I just wanted to get the love back because I just wasn't enjoying running, and I wanted to do something that I did enjoy and that I knew I could kind of do. That just made me happy. So for each year, obviously, there's age group national championships, and I think it was my last year at under 17, I said to my coach, I was like, I'm really sorry, but I don't want to do 4s. I want to do high jump. And he was like, well, I mean, it's your decision. Like, you take responsibility of it. If that's what you want to do, then go and have fun. So I went along and I ended up winning my first national title in high jump. And I got a new PB of 176. And I was just like, oh, this is all right. I've had a great time. I've enjoyed myself. So then I rang my coach after that and I was like, look, I'm really sorry. I'm going to focus on 400s. I've had my fun. Like, I really do want to try, and I want to be a good 400 meter runner. And his reply was, you can't win a national title and then quit. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he put me in touch with Fuzz. And then, yeah, the rest is history. So, yeah.
Definitely the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, I think I did 2 years of 4s and high jump, and then I finally fully transitioned to high jump, because at that point I was only travelling to Birmingham maybe once or twice a week to see Fuzz. And then after that, yeah, finally, yeah, took the jump and just went straight to high jump.
Yeah, literal jump.
Pardon the pun, yeah, sorry.
But it's putting yourself first again, isn't it? As in the one that you loved.
Definitely. And I mean, my mum and dad have always let me make the decisions. They've never chosen for me. Anything that I've done in my life is from me, it's not from them, and I'm grateful to them for that, because they always gave me a choice. And then obviously if it didn't go wrong, it was on me then, it wasn't on anybody else. So yeah.
How much of an influence has your coach been?
A huge influence, I think. Well, I've been lucky to have two amazing coaches. So I was with Trevor Painter, who's the coach of Jenny Meadows. So I was with Trev for a really long time, and he was the one who kind of was like, you know, you've got a bit of a talent, let's just run with it. And then since then, Fuzz has pretty much changed my life. He's like my second dad. I probably tell him more than I tell my own dad at this rate. But I think just having such a strong relationship with your coach is so important, because obviously for me, athletics and high jump is one part of my life, but there's so many other aspects going on as well. I think it's important that they understand what's going on. Because, I mean, especially over the last 4 years where I've not performed to how I should have, I've had other things outside of high jump that have impacted on my life and made me unhappy. So then that had an effect on high jump. And I think if your coach doesn't understand that, then it's very difficult to have a relationship. And obviously, you know, I know a few athletes who've bounced around coach to coach. But I've been lucky. I've been with Fuzz 5-6 years, and obviously now he's the one who's stuck by me and backed me for the last 4 years when I've kind of, you know, plateaued, and then we finally had a breakthrough this year. So yeah, he's been a massive influence, and it's really, really important.
Yeah, and my next question was going to be, like, who else are your role models and your inspirations? But I've heard you speak about Jenny Meadows before. I imagine she's right up there in terms of an inspiration to you.
Yeah, I mean, of course. When I was doing 600s when I was like under 11, Jen was, you know, we're both Wigan Harrier athletes. She was it at the time. She was the one to, you know, on the telly week in, week out, and we were watching a run from home, and then I'd go down to the track at Robin Park and I'd see her in real life and I'd be like, oh, that's a superstar. And I've been so lucky to, you know, become friends with Jen and spend a lot of time with her, you know, on the track and off the track. And obviously now she's the director of Totally Runnable, and that's a company that I do some work for. So I've got a really, really good relationship with Jen, and she still inspires me to this day in her athletics career. And, you know, outside of athletics, she's, you know, one of the directors, and obviously they've just had Arabella now. So she's a new mum. And Jen's been one of my inspirational people for probably forever.
That brings me perfectly onto Totally Runnable, because you are the third person we've had on from Totally Runnable on this show.
Oh, yes.
Jenny, of course, being one, and the co-founder, Nat Jackson, being one as well. It's probably about 2 years ago now. I forget how long podcast has been going sometimes. Obviously, it's a brilliant organisation. We've done so much or spoken so much about it in the past. In terms of your role with the organisation, just tell us a little bit about that and how you got involved in the first place.
So I originally was one of the lead trainers. So Jen actually approached me last January, I think, and just, oh, it might have been a little bit before that, actually. And she said, oh, there's this company, you know, there's a bit of like a coaching element to it. It's based on mindset and then a little bit of running, like using running as a tool. And at the time I was like, oh, you know, I could do with a little bit of money. Like, sounds great. You know, once a week in Manchester, running a couple of workshops for primary school kids. And she was saying, you know, their mission is to close the gender sport gap. And as we know, you know, women get it harder than men in sport these days. And their mission was to try and, you know, sort that out. I thought, oh, that's really cool and really interesting. So I went along, and I think Jen and Emily, the other co-founder, were running a session in Manchester, and I just went to watch, to see what it was about. And I got really involved in the session, I think, and I was joining in with like the little activities and things like that. And I think Emily particularly was impressed, because she thought I'd just sit and observe. But I just threw myself into it, got involved, really enjoyed myself. And then after that, they were like, right, do you want some work? And I was like, oh, yeah, that'd be really cool. And then obviously 3-4 months later, we get to COVID. I was put on furlough, only probably in the June, July, maybe. So just before that, I started doing more like admin office kind of stuff. And then eventually I ended up taking on the role of business development coordinator. So I was liaising with the schools, with the head teachers, getting schools in, and doing meetings with all like the PE leads and things like that. Now, I'd never done like a business role or anything like that before. So this was a whole new skill set that I was just exploring. And that was really, really exciting. So I kind of like was thrown in at the deep end, really, because Nat likes to do things her way. So everything that you do, it has to go through her. And I think I was doing a couple of little things and she'd check over it and she was like, oh, that's exactly how I do it. And I was like, all right, okay. So it's kind of getting the hang of it. But obviously it's been really difficult with COVID because we've not been able to get into schools. But when I was doing the lead training, it's so, so rewarding going in, doing a 6-week block and just seeing the little changes that we make to girls' confidence in school. Because that's ultimately what it comes down to. You know, we want to encourage these girls to do sport and to excel in all their other talents. It doesn't necessarily just come down to sport. We are obviously using running as a tool to measure, you know, their efforts and that kind of thing. But ultimately, it's unlocking skills within them and you know, this confidence that they can, that's transferable across all aspects of their life. And it's just triggering that within them. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, and you touched on sort of the gender gap there between boys and girls in sport in particular, and it's something we've obviously touched on quite a lot on this show, and why we have such a big emphasis on women's sport, specifically as a tool for, like you say, unlocking a lot of that confidence in kids. Some of the issues we have to address, because I suppose there are a lot of just deeper issues at the same time, whether it's confidence, mental health, body image a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Is that essentially what you're seeing? Is those are the issues that we really need to tackle? But
yeah.
But how much of an influence does sport play a part in that?
I definitely think that they are the main issues, you know. I'm a huge advocate for mental health, and that's something that's so important and personal to me. And I just do not think it's understood. I don't think there's no finance behind it. People like to talk, so people will talk about it, but there's not a lot of action, and that's what I struggle to get my head around. You know, you see it all the time on social media, all these campaigns, all these people just saying, yeah, we need to help people with mental health, you know, we need to sort out body image, but then where's the action? And that's what something that I want to work towards, and you know, working with Totally Runnable and going into these schools, you know, we're the action, we're trying to make a change. And I mean, it is really difficult because social media is just crazy at the minute, and obviously, you know, you've got all these filters and these fake lives online, and you know, young people nowadays, you've got 7-year-olds with iPhones, they'll be seeing all this, and that's they want that as their future, that's their, you know, that's their role model. And we want to push, you know, women playing sport. We want these images out there of inspirational women and amazing, you know, sports people. And I mean, we talk about the gap, and it is men versus women, but also men struggle with mental health and body image as well, and I just don't think those things are addressed. So there's just a lot that does need to be done, but it's just going to take time, I think. And organisations like Totally Runnable and, you know, campaigns for mental health, they're great, and we do need to just keep working and take action.
Definitely. It's something we've mentioned so many times, and the body image side of things specifically. I don't name drop Khloe Kardashian often on this show, but look at what happened with that.
Yeah.
The unfiltered picture that went round.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of summed up a large part of the problem that there is right now, with social media and all that sort of stuff. In terms of, I suppose, bringing this a little bit back to COVID, but again, with kids in mind and the fact that they've had so long off school, is it important we don't neglect the physical exercise, physical activity side of things, when I suppose there's a lot of the rhetoric has probably been about getting them back into class ultimately, so they didn't miss out on learning, but that we don't park that to the side as sort of an afterthought?
I think before COVID, there was a huge push for more sport within school and physical activity being prioritised. I think there was a report done, and obviously they were saying that kids were less physically active nowadays, and the dropout rate in school sports clubs has gone through the roof, and particularly with the girls as well. But then I think over lockdown, a lot of kids have become physically inactive as well. And that's been shown in the schools, and the teachers have noticed that. So I think, well, I'm hoping they do make it a priority. Obviously, they're stating that they've seen these changes, so I'm hoping that they're going to do something about it. Obviously, with the company Totally Runnable, we're hoping to get into schools and to just reiterate that fact and be like, okay, so we're here to help you, to support you, to guide you, and make sure that PE isn't being neglected, because I think over the last few years it has. And, you know, the push for maths, science, English has gone through the roof. But then kids aren't happy because they're not able, they don't exercise, they don't go out, they've sat inside playing games. And then parents don't know what to do because they've already been sucked into this social lifestyle, this sedentary lifestyle, and they're just so focused on social media. So I hope that, you know, all this homeschooling as well, it'll give parents the opportunity to be like, right, we need to get them in clubs, we need to get them outside, rather than being stuck in, you know, on the laptops, computers. Because I spoke to a few parents, and obviously homeschooling is probably hell for them. And the easy escape is, oh, just give them the iPad or let them play on the Xbox, rather than, right, let's go for a walk, let's take them out, let's get down to the local park, let's do a kickabout. I mean, obviously, the restrictions were difficult at the time because we weren't allowed to do any of that. But now, definitely, I think there should be a huge push just to get the kids out there and being active, yeah.
Wholeheartedly agree with that. So, very well said. Going forward, sport-wise, what's next? What's next in the plan? Or have you set yourself any targets, or is it just going with the flow, so to speak?
So obviously indoors was great. I jumped in PB and there was definitely, like you say, I thought more in the tank, but I kind of ran out of opportunities. So obviously we've got Tokyo this year and I'm doing everything possible that I can to get there. Ultimately, that's it. There's nothing else on the calendar. You know, there's a couple of meets, you know, there's domestic meets, but you want to be going to the Olympics. And I mean, if I can make a European final and jump a PB and perform on the big stage, then there's no reason why I can't put myself in a position to qualify for an Olympic Games and go and do the same thing there. So I think indoors has given me a huge confidence boost and a kind of rocket up the backside to be like, come on, like, you can do this. So I'm hoping to open my season on the 12th of May, and then I got an invitation to the Gateshead Diamond League on the 23rd of May, which is really exciting. So that's my first ever Diamond League. And then obviously looking forward to the trials in Manchester in June, and then, yeah, I just want to get a ticket to Tokyo, really.
Definitely, fingers crossed on that one. But like you say, you've proved that you can perform on the big stage, so the potential is definitely there for that Tokyo plane ticket.
Yeah, I mean, everyone says, oh, I want to go to the Olympics, but I'm like, no, I want to go. So I've made the decision in my head, I'm like, right, I'm going, so I need to sort myself out.
Exactly.
But we'll see.
We're all looking forward to it in one way or another.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thank you so much, Emily, for coming onto the show today. I thought that was really, really fun. But a lot of important messages there at the same time that I think a lot of people can probably draw something from that in their own lives at the same time. And yeah, I'm sure I and everyone else listening will wish you the very best going forwards, and we'll similarly keep fingers crossed for all things Tokyo. So thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me. I've had a really good time.
A huge thank you to Emily for taking the time to chat to us on the podcast. We and many others are very excited to see what she does next, and there was certainly loads to take away from that interview, be it the mental side of sport, but also the work Totally Runnable does. Before I bring this episode to a close, some final messages. Tomorrow, that's Monday, May the 10th, marks the first day of Mental Health Awareness Week 2021. Here at Sportspiel, mental health and sport is a massive talking point for us, so we will be running a special series of podcasts throughout the week. 5 episodes in 5 days, all discussing different topics and different stories about mental health. Joining us for those episodes, we have the likes of GB steeplechaser Iona Lake. We have former Welsh boxer Russell Pearce, who speaks brilliantly and openly about his alcohol addiction. We have Chris Murphy from Sporting Chance, who takes us through his gambling addiction and battle with depression. And we also hear from previous guest Patrick Foster once again. We've also got guests from the LGBT community, including Martin Stark, the CEO of the World Gay Boxing Championships. And we also have a number of brilliant journalists joining us, including Rebecca Myers of the Sunday Times, Ryan Conway from The Athletic, Tommy Wathen from the Daily Express, and Emma Smith, the assistant editor of Goal. That's just a sample of what is to come, but please tune into the episodes. There are so many valuable takeaways and talking points, and please help spread the message throughout Mental Health Awareness Week in a year that has, let's face it, been incredibly tough for everybody. Finally from me, you can see what we're up to on our social media platforms. All of our handles are SportSpielPod, and we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you can, please spread the word of the podcast. It's how we are discovered in the first place. Take care, everyone. That is it for this particular episode, and you'll hear more from us at SportSpiel very soon. Bye-bye.